All right, we're on page 7 in your folders. We have just a couple more questions to do with respect to Lesson 2. And then we'll get into the bulk of Lesson 3, which are starts these propositions that we've noticed on Sunday in our introduction. So turn your Bibles to Galatians chapter 1 in your folders to page 7. Here's just a short review of what we finished class with on Sunday. The opening concern, we've looked at the salutation, just the normal, some of the normal aspects of an opening of a letter. And we were discussing Paul's remarks, how they had quickly turned away from Christ, and how to do that is indeed a fatal error. And we looked at the fact that it's not an equal alternative, going to another gospel, and we gave an illustration on that on Sunday. And then this passage here that we're looking at, Galatians 1, 6 through 9, we made some comments about that. That's just about as strong a New Testament passage as you're going to find, I think, that will show the exclusiveness of the gospel, how we cannot leave the gospel of Christ for any other doctrine and expect to be pleasing to God. That's just not going to happen. The New Testament never, as far as we can tell, never gives that kind of an encouragement to go find some of the doctrine somewhere else. Rather, it points us always to the doctrine of Christ. And then we also looked at Jude 3 and 2 Peter 1 and verse 3. These are all just supporting passages that go along with the thought that Paul was stating here. All right. That's pretty much what we were talking about, the first part of verse 7. Now, the last part of verse 7, how does he describe the Judaizing teachers? With the last part of verse 7. What were they doing? Perverting, some versions say, or some versions say distorting the gospel of Christ. So let's look at verse 7 again. After he says at the start of the verse, based on that phrase, the different gospel in the end of verse 6, which is really not another, only there are some who are disturbing you, that is the saints, the Christians, and they want to distort the gospel of Christ. And so the ones in Galatia, that is the Christians, these are the false teachers. The ones in Galatia who were troubling the saints were also guilty of distorting or perverting the gospel of Jesus Christ. And just as an example of what we're talking about here, because Acts 15 does go hand in hand with the book of Galatians. So hold your place here. Let's look back at Acts chapter 15 and some statements from that well-known chapter. Acts 15. And we'll say more about Acts 15 in chapter 2, but let's just look at it briefly with chapter 1 here. What was the situation in Acts 15? All right. The false teachers in Acts 15, were they or were they not Christians? Yes. Well, I wouldn't say probably. I think they were. I think we can prove that they were brethren. They were Christians. But they weren't teaching truth. They came, and who were they troubled? Well, what was their ethnicity? Jew or Gentile? They were Jews. And what were they teaching? And who were they teaching? They were telling the Gentile Christians. Now, if you're really going to be right with God, you first have got to be circumcised. You'll see that there. End of verse 1. Unless you are circumcised according to the custom of Moses, and they're not saying it's really just a good idea. No, what was their statement? You can't be saved. You cannot be saved. You cannot be right with God unless you are circumcised after the custom of Moses. Now, what kind of an effect did this have on the Christians, the Gentile Christians in the area? Well, we won't really know that until we start looking at the letter. So, as we just quickly build a synopsis of the chapter, they were causing. In fact, it says in verse two, Paul and Barnabas. Now, these men came down from Judea to Antioch. This is Antioch of Syria, where they've come. Well, who's at Antioch of Syria? It was somebody's important home base throughout much of the book of Acts. Paul and Barnabas, the author of this letter we're studying. And they come to Antioch, and verse 2 tells us how big an issue this was. Somebody read for me, who has the old King James? Anybody have the old King James? Verse 2 of Acts 15. Anybody have the new King James? I'll take Greg, read verse 2 for us of Acts 15. Okay, they had what? No small dispute. What's that mean? It's a big one. If it's not a small one, it's a big one. So this was not just some little difference of opinion. No, this was a huge divide that was being caused, a huge schism among the brethren. No small dispute. Mine says they had a great dissension and debate. So Paul and Barnabas are arguing against this in Antioch. But the decision was made to settle this in the most appropriate way. What course of action had to be done? Not yet. Go up to where? Go to Jerusalem. Have all the apostles look at this, and also what other group of men? The Jerusalem elders. Have them look at it. Let's go up there and hash it all out. All right. So they go up there, and not to analyze Acts 15, but you read the chapter, and three groups of men speak. James speaks, and Peter speaks, and Paul and Barnabas speak, and so they get all that those speeches made, and the decision was made then to write a letter. And do what with the letter? I mean, why write the letter? Well, who's going to get the letter? Yeah, they're going to send the letter around to all the area churches, but especially, who needs to read the letter? The Gentile Christians who are being troubled. It's to ease their minds. Because either what these men is teaching is true or it's not. There's no middle ground here. Now, I want you to see the parallel between Acts 15 and Galatians. It's exactly the same issue. In fact, I'm not so sure as to what Paul's referring to here may have Acts 15 someone in mind. Because in chapter 2 of the letter, I think he does allude to that. So, in Acts 15 at verse 1, the Jews taught what they did. Verse 5, certain ones of the sect of the Pharisees. Now here's how we know these were Christians. Look at Acts 15, verse 5. Certain ones of the sect of the Pharisees who had believed. So these are Christians. They said, it is necessary to circumcise them, that is the Gentiles, and to direct them to observe the law of Moses. So basically what they're saying was, these Gentile Christians, they first must become a Jew before they can be a Christian. That's why it's necessary that they undergo this process and this procedure. Now, drop down to verse 24 of Acts 15. This is in the letter that after the speeches are made and the elders. In fact, who gave the idea of writing a letter? Anybody remember? James did. That's right. James says, verse 19 and 20. He says, we need to write them. Let's send out a letter to all the area churches in the region, all the Gentile brethren, so that they will know that this issue has been discussed and the apostles have come down on the side of truth. And that is to say, in essence, the answer to the question, must Gentile Christians be circumcised? What was the definitive answer? No. And we don't need to trouble these brethren anymore about this. So look how the letter begins. Acts 15, verse 23. The apostles and the brethren who are elders to the brethren in Antioch and Syria and Cilicia who are from the Gentiles, greetings. Now verse 24. Since we have heard that some of our number, talking about Christians, some of our number to whom we gave no instruction, means what? The apostles are saying in the letter, we didn't tell them to teach this. That's right, Mike. They did it on their own. We gave them no such instruction. This is all on them. They came from us, but we didn't instruct them in this way, to whom we gave no instruction, have troubled you or disturbed you with their words, and they are unsettling your souls. So see, how big a deal was this? This was causing tremendous turmoil and angst among the early churches. And so back in the letter now, when Paul is saying, back to Galatians 1, and this is verses 6 through 10, this opening concern. When he admits that there are some among you who are troubling you and disturbing you, well, do we have an account or example of when that took place? Yeah, it's Acts 15. That's exactly when that took place. And I think we see some overlap there, some parallel. Now, I've got Acts 61 through 5 on the chart. That just tells us there's a reference when they started to deliver the letter. Where were some of the churches that received the letter? Well, if you read those verses, you'll find that some of them were Galatian churches, Galatian cities. So they got the letter. Now, it wasn't just in Galatia, it was elsewhere. But Galatian Christians were included in receiving this letter from the apostles and the elders in Jerusalem. So this opening statement of concern, back in Galatians 1, he says they're troubling you, they're disturbing the saints, they're unsettling your souls, but what they're doing is they're distorting and perverting the gospel of Christ. And so that's why Paul says, I'm just so amazed, I'm stunned that you're turning away so soon from what was preached to you when I was there to this different gospel, which really isn't another. Thinking about Matthew 18, what did Jesus say about leading someone astray? He had already covered the seriousness of this issue. What if you lead someone astray? He says it's better if what? That's right. They hang a big rock around your neck and drop you in the depth of the sea. Than for you to lead someone astray. That's how serious it is that we only teach truth. We must always only teach the truth and teach nothing else. Certainly not opinions, not anything else other than what the apostles have delivered to us. All right. Now, look at verses 8 and 9. These are probably two of the more well-known verses of Galatians 1. After Paul has said, I'm amazed, I'm stunned, man, you got these guys out here that are leading you astray, look at the emphatic way he makes his point. But even though we, or an angel from heaven, should preach to you a gospel contrary to that which we have preached to you, let him be accursed. As we have said before, so I now say again, if any man is preaching to you a gospel contrary to that which you have received, let him be accursed. So how serious is Paul taking this? Now, this is pretty... That's right. The Galatians' apostasy was so serious that Paul expressed the impossibility of another apostle or even an angel preaching another gospel. Doing so would bring a divine curse. The word here in the Greek is anathema. Look this word up. This is what anathema means. It's a thing that is devoted to God without the hope of being redeemed. A person or a thing could be an inanimate object, not just a person. A person or a thing that is doomed to destruction and subject to the direst of woes. That's what anathema means. And Paul says that even if a whole legion of angels came down here, one angel, a whole legion of them, or any other apostle come down here and preach something other than what you heard me preach when I was with you, Paul says, let him be this. Let him be under the divine curse without any hope of being redeemed. Devoted to destruction. Now, that's a good point, Brother Lambert. Now, what about you look across the religious landscape, what kind of things do you see taught? Anything goes. And you think the vast majority of people are paying attention to these two verses? I don't think so. Now, we need to pay attention to it, yes. We've got to make sure that we're... And I often thought, you look at verses 8 and 9, I've often thought, well, Paul's point is so strong in verse 8, he repeats it in verse 9. And that's true. But do you see any difference? And I'm going to get really nitpicky here just for a moment. Do you see any difference between verses 8 and 9? Where he changed the wording some. All right, that's the first one. Verse 8 says, though we or an angel is changed to what in verse 9? if any one or any man, some versions say. There's one more difference. Anybody see it? There we go. Verse 8 says, if we or an angel should preach to you a gospel contrary to that which we have preached, that's verse 8, is changed to what in verse 9? To what you have received. See that? So for effective communication to take place, there's got to be two halves, right? There's got to be the one that's doing the teaching. That's important. But what is equally important? Doing the receiving. That's right. That's what education is. That's what communication is. It's not just the telling. It's also the reception of the message. And until reception takes place, there's not been true communication. Both halves are important. So, who has the responsibility? The teacher or the hearer? That's a trick question. Both do. That's right. Both do. It's incumbent upon the teacher to teach what is true. Now, whether the audience receives it or not, he's going to have to teach the truth. Remember, Paul talked about itching ears in 2 Timothy 4. Well, he said, Timothy, do what? You preach the word. You be ready in season, out of season, you just preach it. Whether they like it or whether they don't. That'll be the hearer's problem. But what if the teacher is preaching truth? Excuse me, what if the preacher is preaching error? Teacher's preaching error and the audience should say what? Now, wait a minute here. That's not so. Here's what the book says. And so we all have accountability in that matter. Pardon? Try the spirits, because there are many false prophets going on in the world. 1 John 4 and verse 1. Good point, Brother Lambert. All right. So to maintain fellowship with God, what did John write 2 John 9? Yes, you must abide within the doctrine of Christ. He who does not do that, he says, hath not God. I've often thought about that verse, thinking about the gospel of Christ as a fenced-in area, as property. And your parents say, okay, you got to stay in the yard. What if you go outside the fence? Well, then you're in trouble. See, you got to stay within the parameters of what is specified. And that passage tells us it must be within the gospel of Christ. So again, these two differences in Galatians 1, verse 8 and verse 9, changes. We can't teach or receive any other doctrine. It's just that important. So that was Paul's opening concern here in Galatia. They were tolerating. Let's use that word. They were hearing. They were tolerating these false teachers. And Paul says, "I'm shocked that you're doing this, and you must not do that." Yes, Basilio. Absolutely. We've got to be people of the book. You're right, brother. Exactly. We've got to study. We've got to be very knowledgeable of the Scripture. And just can't study when we come here together. We've got to be doing this every day. Good point to make. Yes? Well, I didn't find anything on those lines. I don't know where that would be found. I mean, I'd like to see that. If you haven't put that down, I'd like to see that. All I could find was what that word meant in Thayer, to be under a divine curse. But your point may very well be valid. All right. Yes, Mike. Do we have any thoughts on the angel from heaven? Well, the only thing I could think of, Mike, was we know the New Testament teaches that the law came through the agency of angels. Did the gospel come that way? No. It came through chosen earthen vessels. So maybe it's just an example to cite. We don't have any record of angels being sent in the New Testament dispensation to dispense God's revelation. It's just a spiritual being that's a servant of the Lord. To say that they're always faithful. Now, there are angels that have sinned. We can find passages that teach us that. But by and large, angels do the bidding of God. They're spiritual beings. And so Paul says, even if one of them came and said something other than what we have delivered to you, don't believe it. Well, okay. Yeah. Well, okay, that's a good point to make. The Mormons will certainly lay claim to angelic help, giving them those golden plates for the Book of Mormon, and that's just not so. Very, very good point. Very valid point. Yes, Brother Lamb. Yes.
That's one of the reasons that I believe that such space is given to pointing out that Jesus is so much better than you.
Yes. Angels receive a lot of coverage in the book of Hebrews. You're right. Okay. So, as we look at verse 10, to sort of bring this opening concern to a close, what does Paul say about whether or not he was just preaching his opinion? How does he phrase it in verse 10? He says, am I now seeking the favor of men or of God? Am I telling you this just because this is my opinion? How does he answer his own question? If I'm trying to please men, I would not be a servant of God. I would not be doing my duty if I cared more about not hurting your feelings rather than telling you what I need to tell you. So this was not just a matter of personal opinion. This was a serious concern of Paul. And Jesus had earlier said, you cannot serve two masters. One. You got to pick one or the other. You can't serve God and mammon. Either you'll hate one and despise the other, or you'll love the one and cling to the other, Jesus said. That's pretty much bringing question 7, I think, to a close. So, this opening concern that Paul has, he's just getting right to it. Again, as we mentioned on Sunday, and Scott mentioned it when he introduced the book last week, at the start of the letter, there's no beginning statement of thanks. Paul just bores right in on the problem. They're falling away from the faith, and he wants them to know just how serious that is. Okay. Yes, sir. Okay. Yes. Okay. Okay. That's a good point, Bernard. The angel was involved in Acts 10, but did the angel tell Cornelius what to do? He was sent on a mission, and the mission was, you go send for Peter, and he'll come and tell you. Yes, it was. It was something different. That's correct. I would grant that to you. Yes, Basilio. Angels were involved in that too. Yes. I'm just saying in gospel preaching that we have like the apostles, did the apostles rely on angelic help? And the answer is no. They had direct revelation from the Spirit. Many passages point that out, namely 1 Corinthians 2 talks about the inspiration process or the revelation process that Paul goes through in that passage. And even in here, yes, right. This statement of the angels just may be a point of emphasis Paul is making. I don't want to say exaggerating, but just going to emphasize his point of how serious it is to hold the truth. Even if an apostle taught something else, or even an angel, you must not listen to him. Because what I taught you when I was there, that's the truth, and you've got to stay with that. That's how important an issue this was. Okay, those are all good comments, good points to make. All right, now, as we said, what I want to do is I want to cover the text, not just going through it verse by verse, but if you look back on page 5 of your folders, this is the information that I want to use in terms of the propositions. All right? I believe there are some propositions in the book, and Paul will make these statements. I'm calling them propositions, affirmations, assertions, whatever you want to call them. They are not proof of themselves. They're just a statement Paul makes that demand proof. And then Paul gives the proof. And so the first proposition occurs at chapter 1 of Galatians, verses 11 and 12. Here's the first proposition. And it's here on page 5. And I ask you the question on page 8. What is the first proposition? So just paring it down to simple form. What was the first proposition? Paul's message what? Okay, it did not come from man, it came from God. Now that's just a statement he makes. Well, we would agree with that, knowing the Paul of the New Testament, but Paul's going to have to provide some proof for that. To convince these Galatians. What would be the purpose of asserting this to the Galatians? Why affirm this? Why even propose this? That's right, because those whom he had taught in Galatia were now giving ear to other teachers. And Paul is saying, now listen, the message that I preached when I was with you, that didn't come from me or from any other man. It came from God. If you're going to believe that, then how should that help the Galatian saints in what to do about, okay, do we listen to Paul or these Judaizing teachers? See the point that he's making. You need to listen to me, because what I taught when I was with you, it came from God, not from man. Well, yes, they were attacking his apostleship, attacking his credentials, his credibility personally, and so Paul was forced to defend himself, which he did, and we'll say more about that as well later on in the letter. So here's the first proposition: the gospel which I preached did not come from man. I didn't get it from man. Nobody taught it to me. Brother Lambert's phrase was, "He got it secondhand." That didn't happen. One more point. He says, I received it by direct revelation. Look at now verse 12 of Galatians 1. For I neither received it from man, nor was I taught it, but I received it through a revelation of Jesus Christ. Paul says, that's where I got my message, directly from God. Now, let's look at what I believe is a parallel passage. We'll come back to Galatians 1 in a moment. Look at Ephesians chapter 3 with me. Ephesians, the third chapter. Bernie, when you have that, would you read for us, please? I've got 2 through 5 on the chart. Just read Ephesians 3, verses 2 through 5 for us, please. All right, especially verse 3, Paul says, how that by revelation there was made known to me the mystery. What is a mystery? Just in a generic term. It's hidden. Yeah, you don't know about it until the end. So this mystery was kept hidden for the ages. But God finally revealed it, verse 5, to who? Well, not just Paul. He mentions in verse 5, the prophets and the apostles. It was made known to them. So that goes along with what Paul's saying back here in Galatians 1. He said, I didn't have to go to school somewhere, I didn't have to go to seminary somewhere, or sit at the feet of the apostles even. They didn't teach me this. I got this directly from God. Now, that's the proposition. Someone says, well, that's the proof. No, but that's not proof. There's no proof in that. Someone says, well, how do we know that Paul was inspired? Well, he was an apostle. Well, how do we know he was an apostle? Because he was inspired. See, that's circular reasoning. One doesn't prove the other. He's not going to give us the proof. And I believe in Galatians 1, there are 5 statements after the proposition that start in verse 13. Galatians 1 and verse 13. And I've got the sections here on the lesson sheet. Question 2, sections A, B, C, D, and E. And we'll look at these together in chunks. All right? These are the proofs that Paul gives to prove this first proposition. All right. Verses 13 through 14. What's the first proof that he gives? After he makes his statement, What does he talk about? You look at these two verses together, 13 and 14. What do they talk about? All right. His background, his former conduct. He says, my first one is, my former lifestyle, my former conduct doesn't match up with what I preached. It's entirely different. Now, do we have any information in the gospel records or in the book of Acts about Paul's former background? Oh, there's a bunch. That's right. Several we could look at. In fact, I've asked you to supply other New Testament passages in your answer. So, verse 13. What does he tell the Galatian Christians? Rob, can you read for us verses 13 and 14 of Galatians 1?
For you have heard of my former conduct in Judaism, how I persecuted the church of God beyond measure and tried to destroy it.
Yeah, no, 14 also.
And I advanced in Judaism beyond many of my contemporaries in my own nation, being more exceedingly zealous for the traditions of my father.
Now, with what we know about Paul's background, if Paul had the choice in the matter, what would have been his choice, at least looking at these two verses and Christianity? Well, what was his choice? Yeah, he not only didn't support it, he tried to do it in. He tried to destroy it. That's right. That's what he did. And Paul mentions that. He says, according to my upbringing or my rearing, how I was raised, that wasn't in harmony with the gospel. How was he raised? As just a Jew? What kind of Jew? A Pharisee of the Pharisees, he writes in Philippians 3. A strict Jew, very contrary to the gospel, not even close to the gospel, he says. It was not something that he had been taught or exposed to growing up. Well, you know, my parents taught me the gospel. No, they didn't. They didn't teach him that. In fact, they taught him the law. And in fact, at whose feet did he sit? Gamaliel's feet, the great teacher in Jerusalem that we read about in the book of Acts as well. So, as a Jew, he wouldn't have chosen this lifestyle. But we're not arguing on what he would have chosen. Because who got a hold of him? The Lord did, on the road to Damascus. And he had that vision and told him to go where? To Damascus, and you'll meet up with Ananias, and you'll be told what to do. Which he was, and we can find that in the book of Acts, obviously. So, his actions, and I mean his former conduct, his former lifestyle actions, were all contrary to the message of the gospel, what he had preached in Galatia. Now, here are some of these verses. Look at these real quick. Let's go back to Acts chapter 7. And we'll just run through these and we'll take just but a minute or two. Acts 7. Who was killed in Acts 7? Stephen. Well, what part did Saul have in that? Did he throw any of the stones?
Maybe not.
Well, we know he at least did what? Yes, verse 58. They began stoning him, and the witnesses laid aside their robes at the feet of a young man named Saul. There we go. First time meeting this man in the book of Acts. Now, chapter 8, verse 1. The first part of verse 1. What's Luke write about Saul? In fact, some versions say he was in hearty agreement with putting him to death. He was glad to see it. Drop down to verse 3. What else did Saul do besides be glad that Stephen's now dead? Made havoc of the church, and in fact, to what degree did he trouble saints? If you were in your own house, you weren't even safe. Paul came and got you and drug you out of your own house and committed you to the Jewish authorities for the purpose of labeling you a traitor or a blasphemer. Now, he's going after Jews, not Gentiles, but Jews, who have turned their back, as he saw it, on the law and have obeyed the gospel. And he called it a sect or a false way. So, Acts 8, verse 1 and verse 3. Now, chapter 9 of Acts, the first two verses. Luke continues. Saul still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord. Went to the high priest. And what do you want from the high priest? Letters. Maybe call them warrants. Let's call them warrants. That's really what they were. Permission to go get these Jewish Christians and commit them to charge them with crimes, charge them with blasphemy, however you want to phrase that. And so he had permission to go where? Anywhere he could find them. And where's he going to in this chapter? Off to Damascus. And of course we know it's on the way he gets met by the Lord. Now, chapter 22 of Acts. This is later, after he is now an apostle. And chapter 22 and chapter 26 of Acts contain the records where Paul tells the story. It says in his own words, Acts 22, starting in verse 3. Mike Bryant, if you got that, read verses 3 through 5 for us. All right, now, he's making his defense before the Jews in this chapter. So you keep reading through this story, and he's saying, and that's when you get down to verse 17, he was praying and fell into a trance, and the Lord says to him what he says in verse... All right, drop down, Norm, to verse 9 and read 9 through 12 for us. Again, still talking before Agrippa. Okay, and that describes the story in Acts chapter. So all these references Paul gives, many of them in the book of Acts. Now, two things that he wrote. Philippians chapter 3. Let's turn there real quickly. Philippians chapter 3, verse 4. This is to another church, of course, not Galatia, but to the church of Philippi. Philippians 3. David Steele, read for us verses 4 through... just read all, 4 through 7. Just do it that way. What things did Paul count loss for Christ? Was it a bunch of junk? A bunch of bad stuff? No, it was what made him a star with the Jews. I gave all that up, but that describes his former lifestyle. He was on the fast track to Jewish stardom, if you will. And then finally, verse 13 of 1 Timothy 1. Paul writes Timothy there. He says in verse 12, I thank Christ Jesus, our Lord, who has strengthened me, because he considered me faithful, putting me into service, even though I was formerly a blasphemer and a persecutor and a violent aggressor. And yet I was shown mercy because I acted ignorantly in unbelief. So all these statements give us from the New Testament, here was Paul's former lifestyle. And he's saying this is the first proof when he says in Galatians 1 that my message did not come from man, it came from God. Look at my background. It was totally opposite what I preached to you when I was in Galatia with you. That's the first proof that he gives. It's about his history, if you will, his background. All right. Now, we have time just to start the second proof, but we'll go ahead and state it. Back now to Galatians 1 and look at verse 15. 15 through 20. Is the second proof. If you look at these verses together, what's the second proof statement? He talks about his initial efforts in preaching. This, of course, would have been after his conversion. So back to Acts 9, we'll use just in a moment as we go through this point. Look at verse 15, Galatians 1. But when He who had set me apart, even from my mother's womb, and called me through His grace, was pleased to reveal His Son in me, that I might preach Him among the Gentiles, I did not immediately consult with flesh and blood, nor did I go up to Jerusalem to those who were apostles before me. But I went away to Arabia and returned once more to Damascus. Then 3 years later, I went up to Jerusalem to become acquainted with or to see Peter or Cephas and stay with him but 15 days. But I did not see any other of the apostles except James, the Lord's brother. Now in what I am writing to you, I assure you before God that I am not lying. So here's the second statement. Paul's going to talk for a little bit about his first conduct immediately following his obeying the gospel, which is in Acts chapter 9. So look at Acts 9 for Sunday, and then look at these verses together, and we'll talk about these, the Lord willing, on Sunday morning in class. Thank you for your good comments this evening and your participation.